Podcasts by Demos.
Hello, welcome to another Demos podcast. My name is Jack Stilgo, and I'm delighted to be joined in the Demos office today by Peter Cockersell from St Mungo's. And St Mungo's have just published a strategy for homeless people and health. And Peter's here to talk about some of the issues that presents with me. Peter, can you start us off by talking a little bit about what St Mungo's does?
Yes, thank you very much for inviting us. St Mungo's works with homeless people and other vulnerable adults in London, and next year will be the 40th year that we have done that. We have a lot of accommodation projects. We work with people on the streets, and we have specialised services for working with people's health, physical health, mental health, and drug and alcohol problems. We also have large employment services and resettlement services, trying to get people back into a job and into somewhere to live.
And as part of that issue, that challenge of homelessness that you're tackling, how does the specific topic of health fit into your challenge?
Well, in some ways, health could be seen as the cause of homelessness, because many people become homeless as a result of physical health problems, mental health problems, or substance use. And this is quite commonly a trigger for homelessness. But homelessness is bad for your health, and that, I think, is the key message that we want to put across. And it's very bad for rough sleeping is an extreme form of homelessness, and even worse for your health. And I think one of the points that brings it home most is finding clients with trench foot 90 years after the end of the First World War, that we have people with trench foot on the streets of London. And I think that's shocking. But on a broad sense, we have people, the average age of death in our hostels for those who do die is 41, which is tragically young. Again, it's a medieval life expectancy. And we have people who have 8, 10, 12, 13 treatable conditions that are going untreated. And that's a terrible shame.
Give us a sense of the scale of the problem at the moment.
Well, we took a survey of 1,500 homeless people, and we found that 80% of them had complex needs. They had health problems in physical health, mental health, or substance use, or a combination of those. And we found that a third of them weren't receiving any treatment at all. And that leaves the other two-thirds who were receiving some treatment. But as most of those will have several different conditions, they were probably only receiving treatment for one or two of them. So it's a very small number who are getting treatment for all their conditions. And that's gives a very large amount of people with conditions that should be and could be treated who are not receiving any treatment at all. And that's one of the reasons we think that there's the high and early mortality rate and the high death rate amongst homeless people.
These people who have often quite sort of complex needs, quite complex conditions. I mean, how does it get to be that those conditions remain untreated?
Well, it's often not the priority of the people themselves, because their priority may be shelter and food and survival on a day-to-day basis. And people tend to seek treatment only when a condition becomes really painful. But the other barrier is that our services are not really geared up, the health services are not really geared up to working with people who have multiple conditions and who have complex problems that go across mental health and physical health, for example, or different kinds of physical health, so that one specialist will work with people's legs and one with their kidneys, sort of thing. And it's very difficult if you're homeless to go to a whole range of doctors and a whole range of specialists, keep a whole set of appointments and follow a whole lot of treatments. And so it becomes very difficult for them to get the healthcare they need.
So what's your experience of what actually happens when a homeless person does go to a hospital or encounter, health professionals?
One of the problems is that homeless people do tend to go to hospitals, so that they have things that should be treated by GPs or nurses, and they're ending up in hospitals, which is very expensive. Sometimes the reception is not as good as we'd like. Some people don't understand homeless people. Homeless people may present in a way that some of the staff find frightening, or they may be uncomfortable with. And so our users, when we asked them, 60% said that they had very good treatment from the NHS, but that leaves a significant number who didn't feel like that, and many people discharge themselves before they get any treatment at all. They can't or won't wait, or they fall foul of somebody and they end up in an argument and they end up being thrown out. And we have had people who, I find it extraordinary, but who've actually been banned from the hospitals in their area, and they're not allowed to go to hospital. And quite what they do with their health problems has never been clear to me.
And this is obviously, I mean, something that St Mungo's is used to dealing with, is these sort of behavioural challenges. I mean, what sort of things would you suggest to staff in hospitals or GP surgeries?
Well, something we'd like to see is an exchange of training so that we can, we do work with these people. Where we have 1,500 accommodation places in London. And we work with people day and night, and we would like to provide training on how to work with people with complex needs and complex issues. We would also like training on health, because I think our staff are not as educated as we'd like about health and don't deal with health problems as effectively as we'd like and point people in the right direction. So I think there'd be mutual benefit in an exchange of training. But we'd also like to take homeless health services out of hospitals as far as possible and bring them to where the homeless people are, in hostels, and have visiting health services.
And who would be turning up at your hostels to deliver those sort of services?
We would like to see GPs and nurses at all our frontline hostels. We would like to see a health check for everybody. We think this is a very simple way of dealing with it, is that each person who comes in off the streets gets a complete health check. And from there, we can see where they need to be referred. Hopefully, most of the people will be treated in the hostel by a GP or nurse, because most of the treatable conditions, if they're caught early enough, are treatable at that level in primary care and don't require expensive hospital treatment. So that's what we'd like to see as a first and simple solution. Also, it seems to us it's possible for specialist nurses and doctors who have the training to work with this client group and are trained in complex needs to come to the hostel, but it wouldn't be reasonable to expect every hospital and every GP surgery to employ one. So it seems to us a cheap and effective solution.
Podcasts by Demos.
And I mean, the challenge that we quite often hear when you ask for sort of service innovation in health services, well, that sounds like A, an awful lot of money, and B, an awful lot of professionals' time that would be used. I mean, how do you counter that? How is this a valuable use of those resources?
It's very much cheaper than people going by ambulance or going to a hospital. And over 25% of our users are admitted to hospital. They very often end up in intensive care. It's very, very expensive treatment. They stay longer. Homeless people stay longer than the average of the population. And so they take up a lot of money from that. They very often have to come back because they have various conditions. They'll be discharged for one, and then they'll come back for another, and they'll come back again and again. And it's not unusual to find somebody going into hospital 3 or 4 times in a year for expensive treatments. It'd be much cheaper to have a GP and a nurse working in a hostel and tackling those issues earlier.
And what do you find when people do go to hospital and they are treated for maybe one of their many conditions? I mean, what sort of things happen when they leave and then go back to their lives?
Well, I think often hospitals don't find out, because they're being treated by doctors and it's not the doctor's job, they don't find out whether the person has anywhere to go to. So they're discharged from what is called medically fit, which means that that particular condition has been treated to the satisfaction of the doctor in charge. But they may be discharged to the street or to temporary accommodation, to bed and breakfast or something, with no support that is inadequate for their support needs or for their care needs. And it's a hospital discharge people assuming that they've got a family or friends or somebody to look after them in the community. But that's not true for many homeless people. And so we have had people who've been discharged requiring dialysis, for example, or being discharged, somebody was discharged and they were told to go home and rest, but they had no home, they were living on the streets. That sort of thing, it just means that people will end up coming back, usually.
Is there a lack of understanding among health professionals about the actual context of these people's lives? I mean, you mentioned that the possibility of mutual training. Do health professionals really need to know what it is like to live a homeless life in order to prescribe appropriately or make sure that the care plans are adjusted so that people do actually stick to the treatment that's good for them?
I think they need to understand something of homeless people's lives, but they also need to understand and be aware of the implications of complex conditions. It's said that one of the great clinical challenges is dual diagnosis, because mental health problems affect drug and alcohol problems and vice versa. But if people have mental health and substance use and physical health problems, and they have, say, 5 or 6 physical health problems, these all affect each other and make each of the conditions worse. And doctors need to be aware of that when they're trying to treat it. And many doctors are not skilled in mental health, for example, or in specifically around drug or alcohol use. And they need to have those skills to be able to work with somebody who has this range of complex needs.
So St Mungo's, I mean, concentrates its work on London, where obviously some of these issues are particularly pressing. And what's your experience of what the sort of variations within and around London are in terms of the provision of these services to homeless people?
Well, King's Fund talked about a postcode lottery, and in a way, if you don't have a postcode, then you're not even in the lottery at all. And so people have difficulty in accessing services. But the services that there are for homeless people vary from area to area. So homeless people face the same problem. They can access dentistry, for example, in one place and podiatry in another place. But they have a range of problems and they can't access treatment for all of them in any one place. And we'd like to see a consistent level or standard of service across London, or a single service for London.
So what are the particular challenges of mental health issues when it comes to homeless people?
Well, I've been working for St Mungo's for 15 years, and when I started, there were 35% of people had mental health problems who were rough sleepers, and that figure is still the same now, 15 years later, and I think that's shocking. There is a lack of treatment for many of the people who are rough sleeping. Have personality disorders, post-traumatic stress disorder, a lot of the psychological disorders, but there are no psychological therapies available for most rough sleepers. Most of these psychological therapy services that are won't work with people who drink or take drugs. And as far as I know, there are no services in London for people with personality disorders, for example, who take drugs or drink. But the majority of the people in some of our hostels have personality disorders and drug or alcohol problems. So there's a lack of treatment, appropriate treatment, and the only treatment that is offered is frequently enforced hospitalisation and medication, which people then don't comply with when they come off, when they're discharged from hospital. So we would like to see a review of treatment. We would like to see more supported housing as well for people with mental health problems, because some people do have severe and enduring mental health problems which won't be easily solved and can't be just discharged into the community and asked to look for a job. I know one of the targets for one of our accommodation projects was to get people back into employment within 2 years. For somebody who's been homeless and mentally ill and living on the streets for 15 years, that's simply not possible. So we need longer term support for people with mental health problems.
So we're hearing more and more talk at the moment about well-being, I mean, the happiness agenda, living good lives, and a sort of taking a rounded approach to healthcare. I mean, how does that sort of talk sit with the things that you're thinking about at the moment?
I think, and that's very much part of our agenda, and it's one of the reasons that we want to tackle ill health, is that for people to enjoy life and to achieve the things that they want to do in lives, and many of these people have quite high aspirations. They need to be healthy. So we also we've stopped smoking in any of our accommodation projects. People can only smoke in their rooms. We have smoking cessation surgeries. We try and promote healthy diet. We try and promote exercise among people, and we have a lot of user involvement schemes that get users out and doing things and in participating and enjoying things so that people can get a taste of what life will be like as they move on. We think that it's very much about a positive self-caring attitude for people who perhaps haven't looked after themselves and haven't felt looked after, that if they become able to look after themselves, this will change their lives. So it's very much about promoting self-care and a sense of self-worth amongst people.
What can government do to help you make that happen? What, if you like, is the message to policymakers from all of this?
I think one of our messages is to make rough sleepers and people with complex needs a priority for government, because people who have this level of need, and I go back to the example of trench foot, in this day and age are a shame to our society. But also, if you tackle those most needy, you will develop services that are effective for treating everybody. And that goes for all the excluded groups, but it goes for everybody. It goes for you and me. We often have more than one thing that we want treated. Let's have systems that really work with people. And I think that if we can work on better systems with the NHS, then that will be for the good of everybody.
And what are the next steps for St Mungo's? What are you doing to address your own diagnosis, if you like?
Well, we think that we should put our money where our mouth is, or put other people's money where our mouth is, and we have decided to pilot what we consider to be really good healthcare services for homeless people at three sites, three of our frontline hostels in London, and we will deliver for a year and a half the best services that we can, and we hope this will produce the evidence to show what can be done to help homeless people. We are a charity, and this is being supported by our fundraising campaign, Homelessness Makes You Sick, which if people want to, they can find details of on our website, which is www.mungos.org.
Peter, thank you very much for joining us for this Demos podcast. We'll be really interested to see what happens out of all of this, and we'll see you all at the next podcast.
Podcasts by Demos.